The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now, on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle, live in studio, waiting to take your call on your health. You know, let's go through it a little bit, because I know you've tried. You've done all kinds of things, and hopefully that, you know, the end product was better health, but it didn't work, did it? Well, here's your opportunity. Call me. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. I have a lot of things to talk to you about. It's a gorgeous day outside, number one. But more than that, you know, we have things in the news, right? We have SARS and making everybody crazy. We're going to talk about that just a little bit. And because I want you to know what it really is and where it came from. We've had that conversation in practice now for over the last, you know, several weeks. People are getting very nervous about this thing. Well, I want you to know the facts. We touched upon it a little bit, I think, last week or the week before, but we're going to get into it a little bit more today. We're going to talk about a little immunological crazy guy called interleukin-6. And you say, what? Huh? What? Well, it has the ability to create all kinds of damaging inflammation within the body, and it can be provoked by many different things, but also it's involved in any kind of chronic pain injury, and we're going to break it down into simple pieces for you so you understand it and what you can actually get done about it. And as we go through it, if you have time, we're going to talk a little bit about how the body reacts to certain types of sugars when it has to do with how your brain functions and how your body's immunological system works and your mood and so forth and so on. So stay tuned. We've got a lot going on. And we're also going to talk about our practice. And by the way, all of you know that there's a practice out in Loudoun that we have, and it's called Core Concepts Chiropractic by Rozelle. A couple of distinguishing features, by the way. It's not associated with the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax, even though my name's on it. It's two different entities. But what I want to tell you about, this is an amazing office, and it has been nominated as one of the top healthcare offices in Loudoun. We're going to talk about that, and I'm going to encourage you to vote for them because Loudoun has the best of going on right now. And I'll kind of explain that process as we go through because there's been a little bit of confusion. So we're going to unconfuse you today as we go through. Having said that, call me 888-630-9625. Let's talk about things that are happening in your life. But let's talk about the SARS thing. You know, this is scaring the daylights out of all kinds of people, and whether they are informed or not informed, and you need to be informed. You need to know. You need to understand what really is going on. And let's kind of break it down in its bite-sized pieces. You know, this really hit the news somewhere around February. But as we go through and pick the story apart, you're going to see this started way before then. And when you find out the people that are involved in this thing, you're going to say, really, what? What's going on? So China has reported something in the neighborhood of over close to 18,000 confirmed cases of this coronavirus. And this coronavirus is infecting the respiratory system. So it's called a coronavirus-infected pneumonia, or NCIP. And it's responsible for a whole lot of deaths. I think the death toll now is up, you know, around 500. The first case was reported back in December. And, you know, since then, there's many countries that have had have reported that this bug is showing up, from the United States, obviously, in Canada and recently, and Australia, Japan, Thailand. You know, Japan right now is quarantined a ship and for 2 weeks. And as you've been listening to the news, you heard that the U.S. government is hands off and said, yep, you're doing what you need to get done. And there is that. So virtually, it's touching everywhere. But the question that you should have is this something I should really be afraid of? And what's really going on? So the first thing you need to know is that this corona-infected pneumonia, or coronavirus-infected pneumonia, is really consistent with viral pneumonia. And there's a tremendous amount of hysteria and fear that's being drummed up you know, and is it justifiable or is it not? Well, you know, when hysteria is purposely being positioned, in my opinion, and if you read through a lot of other documentations and Mercola and other people like that, it follows a well-worn pattern where population is kept in a state of fear about these microbes so that, again, my opinion that drug companies can come up with a cure to rescue them with another yet extremely expensive drug or vaccine, and potentially, by the way, mandatory. You know, if you go back to the Affordable Care Act, when that came out, there's a piece in it that a lot of people don't like to talk about, that when problems show up, that the government, in concert with local medical authorities, can decide whether it's epidemic, number one, or pandemic, depending on the area, and then they can decide the mandatory fix for it. And if you're not willing to participate in the mandatory fix, they can isolate you from population. Now, if you don't believe me, go read the thing, because I did, but way back when it was there, 2,700 pages, and we downloaded, to got all the preambles and so forth, because I had to give presentations on it for over 2 years. And so read that silly thing. You're going to find things like that. But let's set that aside just for a second. So January 2018, China's first biosecurity level 4 lab is what they call it, designed for the study of the world's most dangerous pathogens, opened its door in Wuhan City. And it's the epicenter of this craziness that's going on, right? So remember what I just said. This is a government laboratory that was opened up in 2018. In October 2019, John Hopkins Center for Health Security, the World Economic Forum, and, by the way, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation sponsored a pandemic preparedness exercise in New York, practicing for the emergence of a new fictional viral illness dubbed, quote, coronavirus acute pulmonary syndrome. Now, you say, what? What? Yeah, I'll read it again. This is 2008 or 2019. Last year, John Hopkins Center for Health and Security, the World Economic Forum, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation sponsored a pandemic preparedness exercise in New York, practicing for the emergence of a new fictional viral illness dubbed the coronavirus acute pulmonary syndrome. Interesting. Sounds a little, you know, connected there. Maybe, who knows? I don't know. Call me stupid, but just in case. You know, chances are that you've heard that the news that this potentially lethal coronavirus is like over the top. So ground zero is Wuhan City in China. And as of February 2020, mainland China reported a total then in 2000, and that was in February 2nd, about a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, that you had over 17,200 confirmed cases. And they said of these, 2,110 were severe cases, and there were 362 deaths at the time. And so it's kind of crazy. And then all of a sudden, this retired doctor, who was one of the primary instrumental people that was working with this virus, dies. Interesting, right? Just very interesting. The first case was reported in Wuhan in December 21. So what was that emergency prepared, whatever it was, October? About 2 months before that, almost to the date? So here's a quote according to ProMed International Society for Infectious Diseases. Quote, patients' clinical manifestations were consistent with viral pneumonia. Most patients had severe non-productive cough following illness onset. Some had difficulty breathing. Almost all had normal or decreased white blood cell counts. They call it leukocyte counts. And the radiographic evidence, x-rays, showed pneumonia. Okay, so now we have, you know, things that are very consistent with viruses. So now the viral pattern is there, and we have evidence of pneumonia. They have difficult breathing. So it goes on. And, you know, when you start looking at this thing, you start wondering, you know, if you can kind of synthesize through the information, what the heck, right? Where's all this coming from, and where's it going, and why was it there to begin with? So with the other thing that they found out about this thing, and, you know, is that this bug is can be transmitted from animal to human. So the first, you know, visualization of, you know, where did it come from was this train of events. Now, since all these cases are starting to show up, including Canada and so forth, there's a lot of, you know, public outcry saying, you know, we need more information. Wuhan is a city of about 11 million people, and they've been shutting everything down from transportation systems and isolation and so forth in an effort to stop the spread of this. But again, let's go back to where it started. Government lab that exists there, that it's animal to human transmission. So, oh my gosh, is there a linkage? Well, maybe. So, you know, few children have yet been reported with the coronavirus. Actually, the people who are most susceptible are elderly and people, you know, above 50. And, you know, when we have immune systems that don't work quite the way they're supposed to. So you begin to pick it apart a little bit more, and you see that a similar pattern of benign disease in children with increased severity and mortality with any age was seen with SARS and MERS. And so we roll the clock back. So where did all that come from? Well, same place in, you know, the world, over in that end of the world, right? SARS had a mortality rate averaging 10%, yet no children, and just 1% of youths under 24 died, and those older than 50 had a 65% risk of dying. Now, why is that? So we're talking about immunological response here. We're talking about that kids generally are in better shape immunologically than adults are as we get older because of all the slings and arrows and the smoking and, you know, the ingestion of things that shouldn't be in our bodies and starts knocking down, you know, the body's ability to defend itself. And that's one of the things we're going to link into our conversation later on in the program, this interleukin 6 phenomena. So, you know, the Foreign Policy Journal goes on to suggest that children may be protected by other vaccines given during childhood. Oh, really? Really? So here, remember what I said early on? Somebody's going to come up with a new vaccine? Mm-hmm. So, you know, such as measles and rubella and so forth, even goes far to wonder whether, you know, the body's immunity against coronavirus might be boosted in adults by giving them the measles vaccine. Oh, wow. Really? How about that? Here it comes. We're coming. Here comes the vaccines. You know, so you go on and you start picking this thing apart and you start sending out coronaviruses. Or a coronavirus vaccine won't make sense unless the spread gets worse. So let's spread it a little bit more. You know, the bare facts are simply this. As far as anyone knows yet, you know, global rollout of a coronavirus vaccine would kill something in the neighborhood of 7,000 people or so. I don't know about you, but I still want to know a little bit more about what's going on with this thing. So here we got another problem. We have another vaccine that was going to be well compensated for. And, you know, I don't know, just call me one of these people that, you know, don't believe much of anything that's written out there. When we come back after this break, I'm going to give you a little bit of a hint on how to take care of yourself and a little bit more about what's going on with this coronavirus. And then we're going to get into interleukin 6 later on in the program. And we're going to talk about sugar and how it affects your brain. Don't go away. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizzo Live. This is 888-630-9625. That's how you find me here. I got a lot of things I want to talk to you about today. It's crazy. Not enough time. Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rizzo. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizzo Live. I am in studio. It is Sunday now at 11 a.m. That's how we launch the program from this point forward. So why? We don't get bumped when it comes to Redskins season. We'll be here all the time from this point moving forward. Talking a little bit about this coronavirus that's out there, and it's basically said it's the same thing as a viral pneumonia pattern. And we brought your attention to the fact that it came out of an interesting laboratory in China that is a government-funded laboratory, 100% government, and that they are they're studying the most incredibly potent pathological entities across the land. And this thing is transmitted, this coronavirus transmitted from animals to people. You know, as I said earlier, anytime you get you know, the Gates involved, in my opinion, and other folks like that, and it's coming out of laboratories that preempt an outbreak of anything. And they're practicing how to protect you from respiratory illness 2 months in advance. It gets my attention. And, you know, when you go back and you really look and compare this thing, and the fears that are being drumming up and the hysteria that's there is only escalating, right? So let's roll it back. 2014, what happened? We were told that Ebola might take over the U.S., and then it was pertussis outbreak, right? And then 2015, it was the measles in Disneyland. And then 2016, it was Zika virus. And 2017-18, it was the flu, influenza. And then back to the measles again. And 2019, you know, and now we're back to, we have the coronavirus. You know, it's like, come on already. And then what do you see on television? You know, more and more medications and drugs. So they already told you that there's no fix for this thing. That they can't fix a viral pattern. That there's nothing they can do except isolate you and wait. Well, there's things that you can do to optimize your immunological defenses so you can protect yourself. You know, one is just wash your hands. And, you know, often and frequently, just soap and water. That's all you need. And, you know, everybody wearing these masks, guess what? They don't work the way you think they're going to work. You know, they make you feel better, but they're really not working the way you think that you work. You know, unless you're dense in the middle of a lot of people and people are coughing on you, and they're sneezing on you, it's like, really? It's, you know, this is just, you know, Dr. Tom talking and thinking out loud. But, you know, each time there's a public health scare, big pharma and the public health lobby is able to vie for a larger slice of your money, you know, tax money. And they get into, you know, development of different drugs and vaccines and so forth and so on. Don't think that's not happening. You know, this January, the 23rd, just a few weeks ago, there's a guy by the name of Anthony Fauci. He's director of NIH National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. He announced a coronavirus vaccine is in the pipeline, you know, with human trials set to start in about 3 months. Stock prices for makers of coronavirus vaccines experienced an immediate upswing. How about that? And would you like to have known that that statement was going to be released? Interesting. Not saying much. I'm just putting out facts, right? So then a moratorium on SARS and MERS experiment lifted in 2017 when things kind of started going away. So I could spend the whole program on this, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to give you a couple tips, some things that you need to do. Wash your hands. Increase your vitamin C level. Make sure you're getting enough vitamin D, you know, to upregulate your immunological response. Make sure that, you know, when you're sneezing, that you cover your face. Make sure that if you're around somebody that's sneezing and hacking and so forth, you know, you want to make sure that if you get sick that you're, and always you should be sleeping in a well-ventilated room. And limit the number of people that you have, you know, attending to someone who is sick so you don't spread it from there. You know, how far do you have to be away? Well, keeping people at least a little over 3 feet away from a patient that is sick is really a pretty good distance. You know, limiting the movement of a patient, minimizing the shared spaces and shared things, and, you know, again, good ventilation. So instructions on preventive gear such as the mask and the gloves and the safe handling and disposal of them, you know, can be done. And you should, if you're around somebody that you know is sick, then the mask works. Put it on. You know, and you can help yourself, but there are specific masks that work well, and there are other masks that don't work much of anything. And you need to look that up. The information is there. Go online, get them, you know. But, you know, a key recommendation which applies to all infections, whether the bacterial or viral, is to, as I went back, wash your hands and make sure that you cover your mouth and your nose when you're coughing or sneezing, and teach your children to do the same thing and wipe their nose, and, you know, just don't assume that, you know, their kids isn't going to do. But if you add C, quercetin, vitamin D, echinacea, zinc, you decrease the amount of sugar in your diet, I mean, dramatically for some of you, you're going to keep your immunological system stronger. Get some exercise. Exercise is one of the key components of increasing immunological response across the board. We're going to leave it there, and I'll probably get back into it again in the next program, but we're coming up to a break, and we're going to talk a little bit about interleukin-6. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Tom Rozell Live continues now on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. I am in studio. It's a beautiful day outside, so go out and enjoy it after you're done listening to the program. But go for a walk today because that's going to increase your immunological response. We're here at 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Want to remind you, Core Concepts Chiropractic by Rozell. And by the way, just for differentiation, it's a separate business other than the one that we have in Fairfax, which is Rozell Center for Healing. But we're really proud to let you know something, that they are being nominated for the top position in the healthcare arena in Loudoun. And we need your help. We want you to go vote for them. So if you're anywhere in the metro area, you can access the Loudoun app for, you know, the top healthcare practices out there. And if I can find it, I'll let you know what to do with it. It's kind of an interesting process. So you have running that practice, you have Leonard Poe, who is shares a little time between both offices, but again, they're separate entities. And my blood, my daughter, Erin Rozell, who is a trainer, but she's also a Reiki therapist, and she also runs that practice, and they're doing a tremendous job. So, you know, Dad's a little proud of what's going on, and just want you to let you know, vote for them. Go out and, you know, hit, and you can vote every day up until about February 21st, so make that happen, okay? We want to be the best for Loudoun. Let's go to the phones. We're ignoring people. Emma, how can I help you? Thank you for calling.
Yes. Hello, Dr. Rozell. I'm one of your patients, and I have a question. I developed stomach bug, nausea, a stomach ache, chills, loose stool. I know you can give me the greatest advice how to control it.
Well,
how to feel better.
Again, it depends what it is, but there's several things that you can do. Knowing who you are, I'll give you a little bit more direction than I would give most other people. Obviously, you're taking probiotic, right?
I do, but it started yesterday, and nothing is holding it. Just everything comes out.
Okay, so what you do with the probiotic is you open the capsule up, and you put it in your mouth, and you do a little bit, a pinch of it, about every 10 minutes or so. And then you continue to do it that way until everything begins to slow down. Get your diet to where you're doing some bone broth soups, and you can put a little bit of rice in it as you feel better. But you want to go slowly with all of this. There's an intestinal tract bug that's affecting lots of people right now. It has the ability to run its course, and the diarrhea can be explosive. It can turn into a lot of water. And then generally within about 24 hours, it begins to slow down. But the best way to handle that is using the probiotic, and I'm pretty sure I know what you're taking, but just do a little bit, about every 15 minutes, and then within an hour you have a full capsule in. But you want to do that maybe about 5 to 6 times during the day, so you're not swallowing anything; you're actually letting it absorb in your mouth, and you're causing the antibacterial effect of the probiotic to have a greater impact. You know, if you want to talk further, you have my number. Call me, and then we'll talk after the show, and I can tell you some of the other things that that needs to go on. But that's the best way for this bug is when it's an explosive diarrheal situation and lots of water. You want to stop any consumption of foods. You want to use the probiotic a little bit at a time, and it will pass within. And then when you can start drinking water, you want to put a little sea salt in the water so you don't become dehydrated. And because this thing, you wonder where all the water's coming from, you know, then you've got to replace that fluid, and you've got to replace the electrolytes. And sea salt has all the electrolytes that you'll need. So try that, Emma. And like I said, feel free to call me, okay?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. 888-630-9625. This bug out there is awful, and it can hit very quickly, very fast, out of nowhere, seemingly. And you feel miserable. You get a lot of cramping with it. Fortunately, it's not one that can cause a lot of damage, but it can if it depletes your electrolytes. So you've got to slow it down. And the best way to slow it down is to go on GI rest, and not eat anything. And when you start eating, you want to eat room temperature bone broths, you know, cook up some soup and so forth. But the probiotic seems to be the best way of handling this thing. If it gets out of hand, then there's a problem. But if you do that, generally it's self-limiting. Obviously, as you know, if patients are older, then it can be much more significant like any other situation. And that's simply because our immune systems have declined over a period of time. Let's talk about this crazy cytokine, this interleukin 6. And, you know, there's interleukin 6, there's interleukin 10, there's all kinds of things that act as immunological reactors in the body, but it's one that's very involved in inflammation, inflammatory responses in the body, and sometimes it gets out of control. You know, so, you know, authors, you know, years ago reported that the joint spaces, right, and that have to do with arthritic degeneration have this mediator called interleukin 6, and it's a pain mediator, and it can cause a tremendous amount of discomfort and degeneration. But it happens after nerve injury, so trauma of any kind, even slight trauma, particularly if your immune system is sluggish, not working the way it's supposed to. It perpetuates tumor formation and tumor growth. It's seen as a result of other induced inflammatory situations like any kind of arthritic problems that can come from your gut, your intestinal tract, and those things are in the realm of rheumatoid type of conditions. So interleukin 6 also is being looked at as a regulator of pathological pain, and that's interesting. Again, we're dealing with a teeter-totter here. You know, so there's the results in a lot of the research that's out there is this interleukin 6, this inflammatory mediator, it's pro-inflammatory and anti-inflammatory at the same time, can affect the spinal cord, the glial cells of the spinal cord. And when that happens after nerve injury of any kind, trauma, a blow to the back, you know, and it can be years ago where now your immune system can't handle things the way it's supposed to. And the activation of other components with it now demonstrates a new mechanism that is about neuropathic pain, nerve-related pain. And so quite recently, a lot of the research that's out there is pointing to the involvement of this thing called interleukin 6 in peripheral nerve injury pain. And the thing is now, how do you control it? But here's the other piece with interleukin 6. It can also affect your genetic map, the expression of your genome, of your DNA. So when it's out of control, you no longer can control your pain because you have your whole body working against you. So the role of this crazy thing in pain is starting to come around and figuring out, okay, how can we control this thing? This, and by the way, the terminology is a cytokine. And so this role of interleukin 6 as an inflammatory cytokine, inflammation is where really all I want you to get out of this, in the production of pain, which we call, by the way, is nociception. That's the term, means pain. So if you ever hear that, it just means pain. And you can't stop it. It doesn't go away, no matter what anybody does. Because generally the approaches are not to control the inflammation, but to control the pain pattern. So they're missing the point on this thing. And this is the whole reason I'm bringing this up today, is because we have patients that come in, they have intractable pain. If you don't deal with the inflammatory pathway, the inflammation, the acid, if you will, that's associated with this whole mechanism, you don't get rid of the pain. You blunt the pain, but then you need more and more drugs to dampen that pain pattern. And pretty soon there's a floodgate effect, meaning that it no longer works because now you have more and more. It floods the receptor. That's floodgate. It floods the receptor with too much of the stuff, and your body just overrides it. And the pain pattern now upregulates itself, and it begins to perpetuate more and more discomfort over a period of time. So when we're dealing with this stuff, we can see it in degenerative structures of all kinds, hips and knees and backs and so forth. And here's the problem. When these inflammatory initiators, whether it's interleukin 6 or any of the other what we call cytokines, are involved, the pain associated with, you know, any kind of peripheral hurt, you know, anything from the brainstem down, just doesn't seem to go away, and it gets worse, and it begins to destroy joint spaces. There's another little cytokine that gets involved that actually gets into the ligamentous tissue and destroys the joint. It breaks it down even more so. So you've got to stop the inflammation. So if you're going out and you're eating things that you shouldn't be eating, that continue to perpetuate pain patterns, meaning inflammation that triggers the pain pattern, like what? Sugar. Like anything that's acid. You know, how many of you drink tons of coffee every day? You know, I hate to tell you, but that's acidic. There's a few coffees that are not. Like if you go get organic Kona coffee or organic Green Mountain coffee, and they're pretty close to neutral, so they're not shoving it down the other way. And you're using water that's filtered, that's alkaline with it. Now you got a shot. But most of you go out and you're grabbing coffee every way you can to. So we got sugars and we have coffee and we have red meats and we have starches and carbohydrates and things like that that are all highly acidic. And so you're perpetuating the problem. And pretty soon now you got joint destruction. People go in and they get, well, I had my steroid shot. Okay, I feel better. Well, yeah, for about 6 months, maybe four, maybe three. And then the pain pattern will slowly, insidiously begin to return again because what do? You're increasing the acidic response. You're knocking down the inflammation, but you haven't done anything to fix the problem. So when you look at the joints and you say, well, I think I'm going to go do stem cell. And by the way, the Results Center for Healing does stem cell therapies. We have a doctor that works with our practice that is expert at doing that. And, you know, it may not work for you. And some people works very well, but some people doesn't work. Why is that? Particularly if you have multiple levels of joint degeneration. You know, you got a couple hips, you got a knee, the doc says, well, we'll wait a while, but you're looking for a joint replacement. And you have that other one, we'll watch that one too. Well, why do you have so many areas that are involved? There has to be something far more systemic. Will the stem cell work in an ideal situation? Yes, I've seen some amazing things that it can do. But if you don't get rid of the underlying problem, that's perpetuating, because people come in and say, you know, why did this happen to me? And then the response is, well, what do you expect for your age? It's not age, my friends. It has nothing to do with that. It's things that have been neglected over a period of time that ultimately have caught up with the joint. You know, it can happen when you're 10 and now that you're 30, you got a problem. It's not old age. So we have to remember that. Why do we allow our bodies to go into a place of disrepair and dysfunction? We can talk about off-centering, mechanical disrelationships. You know, in the jargon of my profession, it's called spinal or joint space subluxation. That means off-centering. Now, what does that mean? That means that the neurological system is no longer communicating properly. We're talking about in the osteopathic profession, just, joint lesions. So when you see those things mechanically, it's not going to work. I always can tell patients, what happens if a plane that's flying from New York to L.A. is flying straight? They think they're flying straight, but the nose is up a little bit or the wing is tilted a little bit. The whole body, the fuselage of the aircraft is going to be rattled. What do you think you're doing with your body if your structural system is not lined properly? That's just one piece. And then you add that to some of the things that you're eating. Not okay. So pretty soon you've got massive joint degeneration that you don't know where it came from, but you continue taking medications from gabapentin to other anti-inflammatories to steroids to try to control the pain until your doctor says, well, you got to replace the joint. And yeah, it's bone on bone and there's nothing you can do about it. And the point of it is you're going to have other joint spaces affected as well unless you do something that affects the cause, the underlying trigger. And that's what we do in our office. We look at the cause, the trigger. We treat the cause, we treat the trigger. We try to get you to avoid and perhaps stop the potentiality of having to have, you know, artificial this and artificial that. You need to understand it. You need to take advantage. You know, that's why I wrote my book, right? Health is a do-it-yourself program. You need to get a copy of that thing. We're coming up to a break. We're talking about some really interesting things. I need an hour for each subject. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. I am in studio. It's gorgeous outside. Let's all go for a walk today. We'll meet in a park someplace and just kind of walk and relax and talk. Wouldn't it be great? What a beautiful, beautiful time. This is weird winter, you know, particularly for a guy that comes from south of Buffalo and 250 inches of snow per year was the average. It's like, and they, by the way, they're buried this year. They've gotten a lot of snow as well. Oh, well, I'm glad I'm here. I love Northern Virginia. Thank you very much. We'll continue to, you know, force ourselves to live here in moderate weather. Every Sunday, 11 p.m., don't forget, tell your friends that we're here, shifted back just an hour. And we'll try to bring you as much data and information that's usable for you. I want to talk a little bit about sugar consumption. And, you know, everybody knows that sugar is not something that you should be doing a lot of, particularly back about 250 years ago. The average consumption of sugar in this country was 14 pounds per person per year. Now it's about 170 pounds per person per year. I don't get a whole lot of sugar. Who's getting my share? So when we look around and we see people and the amount of functional disease states, it kind of has evidence that we're doing something that isn't appropriate. And here's one of them. So what I want to share with you is some facts, right? So when you eat too much sugar, it's the underpinning of things like obesity, which as far as I'm concerned is epidemic in this country. And it continues to elicit addiction-like cravings for, you know, the sugar, just like any other drug that we're abusing. You know, researchers have looked in animal studies, and the amount of sugar to water access, you know, for, you know, on an hourly basis for 12 days, and show that sugar reduced the availability of opioid and dopamine receptors, and which is indicative of, you know, opioids and dopamines are your feel good juices. Your body should produce some of those, but now you crave them. So where you're getting it from is your sugar. So it has the same effect in the brain as that type of drug. Kind of interesting, right? So now you get this overstimulation and it downregulates, you know, the brain receptors, as they're called, to protect your brain, you know, to try to protect your brain from the damage of this sugar, which, by the way, remember I said earlier on, it's acid. So there's a problem, right? Because now you need higher doses of the substance to get the same pleasure response of that you're trying to get from these dopamine, you know, receptors and, you know, opioid receptors. So it's, you're locked in. It's just like heroin. It's like, oh my gosh, right? So daily sugar consumption also impairs your memory pattern, your spatial memory pattern, and it inhibits the repair process. It's called neurogenesis, the creation of new nerve endplates, particularly in an area of the brain called the hippocampus. It's an area involved in learning and memory processing. So the more sugar that you eat, the dumber you're going to be, you know, or at least the ability to assimilate new information. Kind of crazy. High sugar, you know, alters the decision-making process. So we know that all of us guys really don't have a really good frontal cortex until we're about 25 years old. Well, if you're hooked on sugar, it could probably take a little longer. Maybe it's never going to form. But seriously, it's aside from the impaired impulse control and the inability to delay gratification, which is that frontal cortex, the alteration may also increase the risk of mental health problems in children and young adults and adolescents. So we're talking about a real serious situation here. And, you know, to ignore it is silliness. You know, on BBC, there was a report called The Truth About Sugar, and it was talking about a serving of pad thai noodles contains about 9.5 teaspoons of sugar. And a package of sweet and sour chicken with rice contains about 12.5 teaspoons, which is more than generally a can of soda. Not by much, by the way. They're pretty close. And so you go and you start looking at all these things, and you got to realize that you're getting tons of sugar. Why do they put so much sugar in everything? Because they know it's addictive, and you want to eat it. And so addictive substances, you know, make money for people. and they're playing on the known neurochemistry of your brain to be able to pad their pockets, so to speak. Again, that's just me drawing conclusions and my opinion, and you're going to draw your own, but why don't you do the research? I think you're going to be surprised. I think you're going to find out that what I'm talking about is probably pretty valid. Anyway, we're coming up to the place I got to say, see you next week. Just remember one thing. I love you all.